Welcome back to the No Name Football Podcast. I'm Jason McKee and my co-host, perennial Pro Bowler, Chicago Bears legend, Mr. Football, the O-line guru, my brother. Brother O, how you doing, my man?
Doing good, J-Mac, doing real good. Start where we always start on our podcast, start with high school football. How did Carmel Catholic do this week? How are the kids progressing this year?
Yeah, first I want to thank you, Brother O, for coming out to practice the other day, man. It really meant a lot to me and a lot to the kids, man. They learned a lot. They were still talking about you at practice yesterday, man, and you really re-energized that group. They really practiced well. So the tidbits that you gave them and the time that you're there was very invaluable. Valuable to those kids, man. So I really appreciate that.
So they liked when I swore at them.
You renewed their mindset, man.
Kids that age, you got to get their attention in a hurry, J-Mac. But I enjoyed it, man. I enjoyed being out there on that football field. You guys are a young, rebuilding program, man. Yes. And I'm excited to see Carmel Catholic in two, three years down the line, even next
Thank
year.
You, man.
Even next year. That scheme you guys are putting in, the way those kids are working, I didn't realize how young you guys actually were. Yes. On that front with a freshman, a sophomore. I know your right tackle's a senior. That kid's a good leader out there. Knows your scheme well. Helps out the young guys, coaches them up. Really enjoy being out there with you. And of course, Rashid, just being out there with our old teammates. We still got to get Rashid a megaphone since he seems to be screaming about a megaphone all over the field. But good. Like we talked about after J-Mac, man, if you can get on a football field somewhere, I like to say fill my football cup back up.
Yes, sir.
You guys did that for me. I went home. My wife, Wendy, was like, what is your problem? I was bouncing off the walls, right? You filled up my gas tank, and I thought I was in a locker room again. So, going crazy at home. But anyway, back to you guys and your kids, and just really loved it. But how'd the game look this week?
Yeah, we had a tough one. Marmion Academy, really good school, a lot of big guys. You know, we struggled that game, so they came out on top. We got another tough one this week against Marist. Marist is a really good football team, well coached. Mm-hmm. I know Loyola played them a few weeks back. Had the opportunity to watch film. Got to see James smack around a couple people on film, man. So I was excited about that. But yeah, they got a left tackle going to Northwestern, a linebacker going to Michigan, just got off from Michigan. But, for our kids, it's a great opportunity that I tell them, we're at home. You're going up against a really good team. And for our seniors, I told them it's a good opportunity for you to cement some type of legacy. How do you want to go out? You got two games left. So you got two opportunities to take advantage of. And, what way to start it to take advantage of beating a really good team here in the Chicagoland area. So, I think the seniors are pumped. We'll be well prepared. We'll be at home. So I think it's going to be a good fall game and a good test for us.
Yeah, Loyola played Providence at Loyola. Providence, I think the week before against Fenwick, lost their quarterback in the fourth quarter. So anytime you lose your starting quarterback, you're a bit undermanned.
Yes.
I think they had a few other guys out, I had heard. Loyola's a lot for any team that comes in without their starting quarterback.
Yes.
Loyola's a good football player. So they ran away pretty early, but Providence kept fighting. But credit to the Loyola kids for keeping their level of competition playing hard. I've mentioned his name 100 times on this podcast, and it's a matter of time before Coach Holosek starts to get offers to coach college ball.
Definitely.
He does a hell of a job over there, J-Mac, kind of like you're doing up there at Carmel. He's got his program up and going, been there a long time now, obviously, but very, very good on defense, and he could coach at any college program. Obviously, the Loyola Ramblers don't want to lose him.
Yeah,
you don't want to lose John Holosek, but that's my opinion of the way he coaches football. But we'll move on, J-Mac. People are probably sick of hearing from me about what I thought about the Raiders game. I'm just wondering what you thought about the Bears' performance against the Oakland Raiders.
Yeah, it was good to see some type of consistency with the offense, in terms of play calling, in terms of the way they played, together as a team. I think the running game got off to a good start, as we've seen. Damian Williams and Khalil Herbert filled in admirably for David Montgomery. I think Buffalo guy did really well. I was really surprised to see how well Khalil Herbert did. I didn't really expect to see him be in there that much. He got more carries than Damian Williams. So, excited for him, a young back that's got a lot of promise. And then obviously Damian Williams coming in, being out from, sitting out the year last year, getting his first start in a long time, really be productive. But that offensive line, they came to play. And brother, you posted some things on Twitter in which, you know, you showed some clips of them getting after it. And I think that's what we need. You know, you got to set the tone and tempo. And, you know, to help out a young quarterback, you got to have a solid running game. And that's what the Bears did. And defensively, you know, the Bears did a lot of great things. You know, the Raiders were in the red zone early. The Bears held them to a field goal. Came back, got another turnover. And I mean, the play of Robert Quinn is unbelievable, man. I was watching film on him last night, brother. I mean, he's chasing down screens. He's chasing down running backs from the backside. Mm-hmm. I mean, this dude has really flipped the script from last year. And we were talking about him all offseason about if the Bears can get him going, you know, how tremendous that defensive line would be. And it's really coming to fruition. You know, obviously he was motivated by having a down year last year, and he's just been playing tremendous for the Bears. You got him and Khalil Mack at bookends, and obviously we know what Roquan's going to do. The secondary has been continuing to get better, so I'm really impressed with what Sean Desai has done with his defense, and we're going to need it this week. You know, you're going up against the professor, you know, the surgeon, Aaron Rodgers, who would carve you up. So I'm excited to see what type of game plan defensively Sean Desai has for Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Because when you look at Green Bay, brother, I mean, they got, you know, remember back in the day you had the big three from the Dallas Cowboys. You had Michael Irvin, Emmitt Smith, and Troy Aikman. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not saying Aaron Jones is Emmitt Smith. Mm-hmm. But Aaron Jones is they're the new big three. You got Devontae Adams. You got Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Jones. That's the new big three. That's the big three for the Packers. So, you know, I know Sean Desai has been up in the lab, you know, studying how he's going to put together a game plan to stop those three guys. And it's going to be a treat here for Chicago Bears fans down at Soldier Field on Sunday.
Yeah, and the Bears, credit them. They go into that game, right? Two tight ends out, J.P. Holtz, Jesse James. Afedi gets hurt during the game.
Yes.
He goes out. Elijah Wilkinson comes in. Like you're talking about on Twitter, I posted a clip of him driving somebody into the ground.
Man.
You know better than anybody how much I enjoy that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Watching them run the ball, obviously, this offensive line better equipped, J-Matt, for that kind of game plan, to be in front, to be leading, to be running the ball. They had to use Alex Bars a lot. I saw Dan Pompey, really good runner, Hall of Fame writer on the Athletic. He said that whoever thought Alex Bars would be stealing reps from Bird. So, you know what I mean? They're using offensive linemen now. Bill Lazor, credit to him, and even Coach Nagy for taking everything personnel they have and using what they have to win that game, right? And like you said, the defense, they start on the first play is a run play. Quinn bends the corner, man, and makes the play on a zone play.
On Josh Jacobs.
On Josh Jacobs.
A really good back.
So that kind of effort, that kind of tenacity, the way they got after the Raiders, really enjoyed watching them play the inside three, I thought, for the Bears. Cody Whitehair, Sam Mustafa, James Daniels played really well. Really, really well. And they're going to have to be the strength of this team moving forward. Justin Fields showed progress, right? 3rd and 12. I saw him beat a blitz on the next play to Cole Kmet. Got the ball out. I think it was five-man protection. They brought somebody extra. He got that ball out. Yep. Cole Kmet catching in a little more from Cole Kmet. You know, the Bears, again, only 20 points, right? Yeah. They continue. We've talked about many times on this podcast that when they talk about the run game, it fascinates me, because even when the run game is successful, they don't score a lot of points.
Right.
You know, this week, Khalil Herbert and Williams combined for over 140 yards rushing, both average over 4 yards a carry. So it was good to see that for the Chicago Bears. Good to see Khalil Mack dominate again. Eddie Goldman shows up 4th and 1, right?
Yep.
They move Leatherwood to guard. Obviously, Leatherwood does not understand the leverage he needs in there yet when you play inside versus a guy like Eddie Goldman. So Eddie Goldman walks him back there on 4th and 1. Even showed up down there on a goal line. Roquan Smith. I mean, these guys, good to see Danny Trevathan back. Good to see Tayshaun Gibson back. Like you said, a lot of packages from Sean Desai. A lot of interesting things out there. He's making that offense, you know, J-Mac, like you know, as a center, identification is huge. Communication is huge. I'm identifying to you who I got, who you got, who we got, who we all got. Now, all of a sudden, Eddie Jackson's playing linebacker. Well, what the hell's going on here? Now they're in dime. Now they're in regular. Now they're in nickel. So you're trying to find, now Danny Trevathan's on the field for, so, oh, who's playing Mike? Who's playing Will?
Yeah.
You know, they'll go to a 6-1, take a linebacker out of the game, put three safeties in the game, and Eddie Jackson's down there as a linebacker, right? But we all know, like you said, the professor is coming this week. Aaron Rodgers is going to recognize all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, to me, the more I watch the Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, Matt LaFleur scheme. They make it look hard, but it's really simple, J-Max. Yep. So they understand what they're doing and who they got.
Yeah, it's a lot of window dressing, like you call it in coach speak, window dressing, where, you know, if you're running outside zone, it's outside zone, but you're going to bring a motion, you're going to bring a jet sweep, you're going to have a shift in there. But in terms of the running back's aiming point, and, you know, you may have a little nuance here that's a little different. So it's going to look different, but it's still the same play. So it's a great way to run the same play a variety of different ways. You call it window dressing. So, I mean, those guys are creative. Those guys are creative. And just like you said, defensively, brother, oh, you know, Sean Desai's trying to confuse, you know, the protection scheme in terms of the offense and the offensive line and the backs. Well, offensively, we're trying to confuse the defense. We're trying to give them different looks, different things they have to account for. So that way, you know, the play may look different, but it's really the same. Yeah. So it's going to be a lot. It's going to be a lot of chess. It's going to be a lot of chess going on this week on Sunday. So, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, football players just line up and run into each other. No, it's a real cerebral game. A lot of study, a lot of game planning goes into this with the coaches and the players, and whoever has the best game week preparation is a team that comes out on top and the team that makes the less mistakes.
Yeah. Just want to let our listeners know that a little later in the show, we'll have our former teammate Thomas Jones on.
Oh, yeah.
He'll talk to us about running backs and what he's up to now, but just he'll give us an interesting perspective on the young running back that's playing and the backup running back and Montgomery also being injured. And then Jeff Dickerson, ESPN.com reporter, he'll be on a little bit later to talk Bears with us and just get his thoughts on what he thinks of this Chicago Bear team right now. But as this team goes, J-Map, talked about after this game that I thought they found their identity, right? Their identity, and I know it's going to be shocking for people, but in Chicago, you're going to play a tough defense, right? you're going to run the ball. The offensive line's got to be playing borderline football. By that, I mean you may pull a flag out eventually. Mauro Edwards pulled a few flags out this week. I was watching him play, J-Mac, and I was thinking, gosh, it seems like this game is personal for him. I didn't realize the Raiders had drafted him.
Yeah.
John Gruden was the one who actually got rid of him. And when I read a story, it said the Oakland Raiders were frustrated with Mauro Edwards way back when they traded him away. And I thought to myself, oh, now I see where the food. So it wasn't only a Khalil Mack revenge game. It was a Mario Edwards revenge game. But the Raiders did not look good, J-Mac. They looked like, you know, they looked like a team that was going through a lot of drops.
Yes.
Their defense was running, looked like they didn't know when to switch the blitz from one side to the other. So they're running the blitz from both sides, which basically left nobody on one side of the field. It was interesting to watch them. John Gruden goes through what he went through this week with his emails, with those comments he made about Roger Goodell, DeMaurice Smith.
Yeah.
I obviously didn't read the emails. I was just wondering, J-Mac, from your perspective, what you thought of that whole situation and that team hearing all that stuff and then going out and trying to execute a game plan.
Yeah, it's tough for a team. It's a huge distraction. It's a huge distraction. You know, when you're locked in game week preparation in the big game, you know, you want to be locked in. You don't want to have outside distractions, especially when it's coming from your head coach. And that's a huge distraction for a team. And, you know, with what came out in terms of a player, you know, you lose people. You lose people. You know, your players are like, you know, we looked up to this guy. You know, we thought this guy, you know, he was our leader. And, you know, all the guys that, you know, he coached, you know, are looking back now is like, man, we never knew this guy. You know, we just knew him as a coach, but obviously didn't know him as a person. And now you feel betrayed. You know, you're like, man, is this how he really felt, you know, in certain situations and towards people? And it's unfortunate because, you know, I was a John Gruden fan for sure. I love John Gruden. I love the offenses that he had, that he would instill. I loved watching him on Monday Night Football and giving his insight. I thought he was a great coach. And, you know, to have this come out is definitely disheartening. But I really feel for the people that it affected, but also the players that he coached that affected him, you know, who looked up to him and played hard for him. So it's just bad for the NFL as a whole. You know, not surprising, you know, these things happen and continue to happen. Let's hope that, you know, for their Raiders organization, they can move past it because there's a lot of good players on that team. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of good guys on that team. And for them, I feel bad. And let's hope they can get past it and continue to play some good football.
Yeah, you know, from my point of view on that and just interesting to me, we try to be as honest as we can on this podcast. So I want to honestly say that I've heard that kind of talk in NFL locker rooms for years, right? The locker room is a place where people they say a lot of things. And I know John Gruden is the head of the organization.
Yep.
And for him to put that in emails to another president of an organization, is crazy. It was 10 years ago. I don't know. I don't know what to feel about it because I know, like people like to say, times have changed. But I would be lying to say that that it shocked me that people in the NFL circles talk like that.
Yeah.
Because I hear a lot of things. I've heard things about being a Hawaiian my whole time I played in the NFL, right? So it's not as – I don't want to call people sensitive, but it's not as sensitive of a place as most places are. Mm-hmm. A lot of that talk there is – borderline, most people wouldn't like it.
Right.
When I was there, I've been out now 10 or 11 years. So, did I like it when I heard it? No. Did I like the fact that somebody seemed to pinpoint John Gruden, release only his emails from 650,000 emails? Mm-hmm. I didn't like that either. Right. I didn't like the fact that that happened, especially when he went after Roger Goodell, who's probably in charge of who, when to release those emails. Right. So a lot of things in this story have rubbed me the wrong way. If we just talk about the locker room for the Raiders, when you watch them on film, I didn't know how much it was going to affect them, but it did.
Yeah,
it affected their team a lot. And when you watch them on film, guys dropping balls, didn't look like guys really knew what they were doing. Watching Derek Carr on the bench, he didn't try to lead his team at all when they weren't playing well. He just kind of sat there with what I think maybe eyeliner on his eyes. Which, hey, do your thing.
But hey, it's Vegas, man.
It's Vegas.
Yeah, West Coast
guys
style,
hanging
man.
Upside down in a halftime show. So, but we'll leave that to Oakland and you know, I just don't know what to, you know, the guy's 58 years old. Yeah. No one's ever called him any of those words, racist or homophobic or whatever.
Right.
And now all of a sudden he is. So it's just interesting for me to take a look at from the outside and you try to figure out what the hell is actually going on, because I've been in NFL locker rooms. I've sat in circles. I've talked to a lot of people from the NFL and I do know how they talk.
Yep.
Right. And I do know what kind of language is used, and I don't like immediately say, oh, that guy is this kind of guy just from the way he talks. I usually take guys for their actions and how they act. But there is the argument that John Gruden is the head coach there. He is the figurehead. And those emails did come out, but who let them out? Who got those emails out all of a sudden? And this just kind of a weird story.
Yeah.
If you just go to the players, though, hopefully they can recover from it. They got a lot of good coaches on their staff, so they'll get that thing moving in the right direction. And we'll get back to this Green Bay matchup, J-Mac. I think the Bears offensive line, and every week you're going to say this with the Chicago Bears, versus the Green Bay defensive line, Kenny Clark, right? Dean Lowry, Preston Smith, even with Za'Darius Smith out, even with Jaire Alexander out, maybe you could argue their two best defensive players are out. This defensive front, they are Rashawn Gary. When they put all their guys on the field, they're very good front, J-Mac, and they're going to be a test for the Chicago Bears offensive line.
Yeah, definitely. And with all that injuries, you know, those key guys you mentioned, they're great players. But when you have a rivalry like this, and we were blessed to be a part of this for a long time, it doesn't matter who's in there. You're going to get 120% or whatever. They're going to go all out. And it's such a great rivalry to be a part of. You know, back when we started our podcast back in the spring, it's funny because, like, you know, this game, it affects neighborhood. It affects generations. And I remember, you know, us being on the bus, you know, coming from the Radisson in Appleton. What was it? Appleton?
Oh, man.
The Radisson Paper Valley Hotel in Appleton, Wisconsin.
With Rambo outside. Remember Rambo?
Yeah, remember that? Hell, they were driving to Green Bay on the bus, and you look out there, and there's Packers fans lined up the whole route on our way to Lambeau. And it's like generations of hatred towards the Bears. I remember I looked over one time, Brother O, and I saw grandma and grandpa giving us the finger, mom and dad giving us the finger, and then I saw the little baby in the car seat giving us the finger, Brother O. I cannot make this up. Unbelievable, it was such a joy to go up there and play, you know, and to play well. You know, we played well up there. I think it was 2006, first game of the season, went up there and beat them 26-0. You know, I don't think they've been held scoreless in a long time. So one of my fondest memories about being the Chicago Bears is going up there and playing at Lambeau and being a part of that rivalry, man.
Yeah, that that defense that year, I was on Instagram Live with Alex Brown and Brian Urlacher last night. We were remembering the Arizona Cardinals game.
Oh, man.
So I think it's 15 years ago now. Amazing. You know,
you guys are old, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. we talked about that, too, also. Like, gosh, that's a long day anyway.
You guys are old as hell.
Hey, man. Gosh. So, one thing I told those two guys was just how good their defense was before Mike Brown. So Mike Brown goes out the Arizona game. Tommy Harris goes out week 9 against the Vikings, I think, right? So when they had those two guys on the field, the Packers got to see them.
Oh, yeah.
They were that defense, Brian Urlacher, Hall of Famer, you know, Alex Brown and Mark Anderson, Adewale Ogunleye at defensive end. I mean, you could go on and on. Guys. Lance Briggs.
Tank Johnson.
Yeah. Alphonso Boone was a monster in the middle there. So Ian Scott. Anyway, that defense, 26-0. But I remember going up there, J-Mac, 1999. And I don't think the Bears had beat them since 1993. And Brian Robinson, rest in peace, blocks a field goal late in the game. And we steal a win up there against a good Packers team. A team we had no business beating, right? But that just goes to my bigger point of in these games – and this is for first place in NFC North. In these games, you never know what's going to happen, right? Obviously, J-Mac, you talked about the big three. Davante Adams, 200 yards receiving last week. Aaron Jones ran the ball well. They had, I think their offensive line went into that day with the least amount of starts out of any offensive line in the NFL because of the injuries they had, right? Elton Jenkins was out. Their center, Myers, was out. So they go in there, but they have the guy, right? They have the great eraser. They have Aaron Rodgers. Yes. So, obviously their kicker misses three kicks. But just as far as here, they have to find a way because they're going to try to motion Davante Adams, put him in the slot, get him against Duke Shelley. They're going to get him off Jalen Johnson, right? Get him against the Bears' weakness, the Bears' defensive line. We'll say this over and over every week. They have to get home.
Got
to
get home.
Chicago Bears crowd, if you're going to the game, light it up.
Please do.
Light it up, man. Make it hard. Yes. Aaron Rodgers wants to use that silent count. Make it. I'm telling you right now, from an offensive lineman to the fans that are listening to this game, to this podcast, it is brutal when the fans are loud. It is brutal. And I'm going to tell you right now, if you're going to be loud as a fan, be loud even when they're in the huddle. When they're trying to call the play, you will mess them up. And if you can get that tackle, he has to look inside at a silent count, right? It's already not Bakhtiari. They're hoping Elton Jenkins plays, right? If you can get them to look inside on a silent count. Sorry about that. Yeah, he's unknown. But if you can get him to look inside on a silent count and just a second or a millisecond late versus Robert Quinn and Khalil Mack and Mario Edwards on the inside and Bilal Nichols and all the looks that Sean decides to give. It's a huge advantage for the Bears, but all has to start first, J-Mac. Like, they have to shut down the Packers' run game.
Yeah, you got to shut down Aaron Jones. I mean, he's been running the ball extremely well. And it's not just, the Packers, their screen game is an extension of their run game. We look at Aaron Jones in the screen game. He's really effective. I mean, he's a guy that can, he's not the biggest guy, but he runs with power. He runs with emotion. He runs with aggression. He's a military kid. So, he's brought up the right way and, you can run inside, you can run outside, but he's really effective in the passing game in terms of the screen game as well. He's Aaron Rodgers' safety blanket out there as well. And, for me, with all these teams and all these defenses, right, Davante Adams is the guy in the passing game, but nobody can stop him. Every single week he's putting up crazy fantasy numbers. He's putting up crazy numbers every week. And Aaron Rodgers, even in all his press conferences, he says the same thing. Hey, Davante makes me look good. So you know who he's going to, but defenses have not been able to stop him. I'm extremely impressed with the way Davante Adams has played, the last few years. I mean, he's such a dynamic weapon, such a dynamic receiver, and they've had a lot of them there in Green Bay. They had a lot of them. You look back, you've had Sterling Sharp. I mean, all the old guys that they've had, Antonio Freeman. All of them to the current guys that they've had, and he's just aligned with those guys. And I think it's for the Bears, it's imperative for Sean to sign that defense, like you said, brother, to figure out how to stop him, because Matt LaFleur is over there designing an offensive game plan that's, you know, putting Devontae on the weaknesses. He's going to put him on Shelley, like you said. You know, he's going to move him around. So it's going to be a tough matchup for the Bears. Definitely going to be a tough matchup, but a good challenge for Sean Desai in that defense.
Yeah, I'm always interested when I hear Packers fans and I hear Aaron Rodgers is mad because he doesn't have enough help. Mm-hmm. Right? You always hear that.
Yeah.
Okay, so then I pull up their roster and you have, well, he's not playing right now, but on the roster is the best left tackle in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Bakhtiari, one in the top, people would argue top two or three.
Okay.
Mercedes Lewis, who's top, maybe the best run blocking tight end in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Devontae Adams, you could argue, is the best wide receiver. Aaron Jones,
yeah.
AJ Dillon, right? AJ Dillon did a good job out of the backfield last week, too. Like you said, they got to watch those guys out of the backfield, right? But I'm just always interested when you hear he doesn't have a lot of help. I want to tell people, if you haven't played offense in Chicago, you don't know what not a lot of help looks like. Right? You got no idea what it looks like. But yes, Sean Desai, big matchup this week. Kind of reminds you of that week one matchup against McVay and Stafford. So we try to see the improvement, the communication in the back end, right? The coverage. Mm-hmm. They had some breakdowns against Cooper Kupp. Didn't touch Henderson. Henderson down, is that right? Did Henderson score for the Rams? They didn't touch him down. We'll get his name before the podcast ends. Touched him down early to our two safeties, Gibson and Eddie Jackson.
Van Johnson.
Van Johnson.
Van Johnson, yep. Van Johnson.
Van Jefferson?
Van Jefferson. I'm wrong, too. Van Jefferson. There we go.
Moving on up. Jefferson. But they don't touch him down, right? So we got to see. They didn't get a lot of pass rush that day. Obviously, it was in Los Angeles, so being at home will help our pass rush.
Definitely.
So another big matchup for Sean Desai versus McVay disciple, right? Matt LaFleur. So we'll see how far this defense has come. We hope Akeem Hicks is growing, feels good. We could use him this week against their rookie right guard. So we could use Akeem Hicks back up this week again. But J-Mac, there's one thing I want to run by you before we got to get to our guests here in a few minutes. But I was thinking about the Bears' biggest thing is they have to create opportunities to score points, right? Yeah. So they picked up Jakeem Grant from the Miami Dolphins. Hopefully he gets maybe we can find like a special teams touchdown somewhere. I'm thinking Coach Tabor going to this game. I think he's got to create a touchdown somewhere in the punt return, kickoff return game, fake punt somewhere. He's got to create points. I was thinking about Justin Fields making plays once everything breaks down. I want to start seeing that from him where it turns into a scramble drill. I was wondering with Coach Nagy and all those guys they have there, right? DeFilippo, Lazor, Henry Burris, Tom Herman, over 100 years of quarterbacking. I wanted to ask you this because I know you coach football. I was wondering, and I'm trying to put this in the words that, you know, try to bring it out of my head, which is a scary place. I was wondering if you can design that. Can you create that in a play? Can you fake a run, sit in the pocket, and they say, okay, 1,001, and then we're just going to roll out, and everybody's going to run scramble drill?
Yeah, a lot of that, a lot of scramble drill. So, you know, most passing plays have, you know, receivers and backs and quarterbacks. They have scramble rule. They have scramble rules in terms of where they're supposed to be if the quarterback scrambles, whichever side he scrambles to. So it's a way you can design that, but it's also should be built in. But like you said, it's, you know, we see when Fields rolls out of the pocket, he's dynamic and he's dynamic throwing on the run. I mean, look at the touchdown he threw there. Who's it? Jasper Horsted. Mm. He fit that ball in there.
Slipper.
And Horsted made a great catch. So having the ability to do that, to be creative, more creative with Justin Fields, like you said, brother, oh, you just get guys, you know, him scrambling. It's hard for a defense, especially a secondary, to contain. And now it's even better because now you're not putting all that pressure or your offensive line to protect for so long. And he's not back there in the pocket like a sitting duck. So, you know, I think you hit it right on the head in terms of them trying to design something like that where Fields does get out of the pocket and try to create so that way they can have some more explosive plays. You know, we need to see more explosive plays downfield. So I think you hit it right on the head. Hopefully, you know, all that years of quarterbacking, you mentioned all those guys, all those gurus, you know, hopefully they have some, you know, cooking up because they're going to need it. They're going to need it this weekend. And I look back at the Bears defense. We look at them. We say, look, all right, the first week you played Matt Stafford, a really good quarterback. Mm-hmm. He carved you up. Played Joe Burrow, young, right? Your defense looked good. Then you played Jared Goff. Defense looked good. Last week you played Derek Carr. Defense looked good. You know, When is the last time the Bears defense has looked good against a really good quarterback?
We're hoping
it's this week.
This week, like you said, with the Twitter posts and stuff, J-Mac, we much rather pump them up.
I'm trying
than
to tell
have,
you.
Then have to talk about the bad stuff. So let me put it this way, okay? Give me Carmo runs, your guys' number one play action play.
So we're running gun right.
Where he's like in the pocket.
He's in the pocket. So we'll run a gun right seven, Florida, X post. So it's 3-by-1 formation. It's the flood concept. Quarterback's in the pocket. So we got the flat. We got the intermediate route. We got the sail route by our tight end. And then on the backside, our best receiver, he's running the post.
Okay, so if we called gun right seven, Florida, X post, scramble right.
He can roll out right, too. He can sit in the pocket or he can roll out.
No, but I mean, like, you. Well, what I'm saying is you sell it. Right post. So you sit there. 1,001, 1,002. Now we're going to roll out and everybody's going to come off their routes and run a scramble drill to the right.
Yep.
I mean, I was just trying to think because the Bears got to find a way.
Yeah.
Find a way somehow.
But you know what that gives you, too? So what that gives you, too, in our play, it gives you – so you have three options. You have three receivers running a flood concept to the right side of the field because it's gun right – it's I'm sorry, the left side of the field because it's gun – it's gun right seven, so it's right side of the field, excuse me. But now you get – the extra option that you have is now you have your quarterback who's mobile and athletic like Justin Fields, and nobody's open – now you give an opportunity to run because now it's outside of the pocket. So now there's a fourth threat.
Yeah, I did like this past week. I think on the third and fourth, third down, he didn't get it. Jonathan Abrams, the Raiders safety, made a great play, but design quarterback ISO draw.
Yep.
I like that play call from the Bears. Get him out, get him moving. Justin Fields showed a lot of toughness. I love when he threw that pass to Horsted, flipped over his head, basically said, come on.
Yeah, he's on the run.
Bring
you
it.
Put
yeah.
pressure on
yeah.
him because now when he rolls out of the pocket, what do you do, right? So what are they going to do, right? You're bringing coverage to you as a quarterback when you roll out of, when you scramble and roll out of the pocket. So when you bring that coverage to you, it leaves somebody open. We see it all the time. You know, the Josh Allens, you know, the good mobile quarterbacks. Aaron Rodgers does the same thing. They'll scramble or they'll manipulate the pocket to bring coverage to you just to set up an opening or a window. That way they fit that ball into one of their receivers.
He's still moving around well, man. Still getting off schedule.
Yeah.
Still making plays. Now last week, he got out of the pocket. He threw an interception. So we could use one of those again this week.
For sure.
It's going to be an interesting game, J-Mac. I'm wondering, you know, a lot of credit to Coach Nagy and his staff last week for the effort those guys put forward because it looked bleak there for a while there at Hallis Hall. And, you know, Coach Nagy's press conferences were obviously a little strange, but I'll give him credit this week. Anyway, we got to get to Jeff Dickerson. Looking for a taste of the islands? Look no further than No Foods. That's NOH Foods of Hawaii. No Foods was developed to reflect the many international cultures and races of the islands. Hawaiian, Japanese, Chinese, Korean, Portuguese, Filipino, and more. Known for the wide variety of delicious seasoning and sauces. The products of No Foods can make anyone a master chef in their own kitchen. Easy to prepare and delicious in flavor are the hallmarks of No Foods. Again, that's NOH of Hawaii. Dishes like Chinese beef broccoli, Korean barbecue, Filipino adobo, Hawaiian kalua pork, and many, many more. Don't forget about the refreshing and very popular Hawaiian iced tea, sweetened with raw cane sugar and just the right touch of lemon. You can find NOH Foods online at Amazon.com and NOHfoods.com. Also in many stores and supermarkets. As we say in the islands, say yes to no. Aloha.
Brother, we got a very special guest coming on with us, a guy who I've had the pleasure of knowing here in Chicagoland for a long time, guy who's covered the Bears for a long time, has done a tremendous job. So our buddy Jeff Dickerson, you can find Jeff Dickerson on, he's the ESPN NFL Nation Chicago Bears reporter. You can find him on ESPN.com. ESPN, he's an ESPN radio network host. You can find him also on ABC7, a Loyola TV analyst, but he's also on ESPN 1000. But most importantly, he's an amazing father to his son, Parker Dickerson, who plays for the Libertyville Wildcats youth program, and he wears the number 34, and he's a stud.
Stud.
JD, how you doing, man? Thanks for joining the show.
Guys, it's a pleasure. And of course, Olin, my son had to get a personal foul for taunting with Coach J-Mac in attendance last week. I mean, of all the games to get a personal foul, my bonehead son had to pick the game with Jason when he was there. But you know what? Young guy, you live and learn, right?
Well, you're talking to a guy, JD, who definitely understands letting the emotions get the best of him in football games. So I hope that's just passion. You can channel passion. You can't give him passion, but you can channel passion. So sometimes it's a good thing to see, you know, and he'll correct that and he'll go to the next game. But some of these calls right nowadays, a little overboard for me. Let those kids get in between the line. Let them express their emotions. So I like to talk to the referee, not your son.
he did flex a little bit on the kid, but I mean, it wasn't that egregious.
No, he made a good flex.
He made a good play. He was excited, man. I'm like, hey, I'm looking there, and you know, Rasheed Davis, his son played for the other team, the Buffalo Grove Bills. So you know, I'm there, and you know, we're like, even Rasheed, we're like, man, let him play. He made a good play, so I was excited to see him play. He's a tremendous player. You know, I already tell JD all the time, hey, I need him a couple more years, man. You know where he's supposed to be. We got to get that Libertyville tag off of him, so hopefully he's up there with us. But we wanted to get into the nitty gritty, JD, and talk about some football. And me and Brother O's been talking about it a lot here on the podcast, and talking about Sean Desai and his defense. You know, what have you thought about Sean Desai and the way this defense has played the first half of the season so far?
I really like Sean Desai, guys, and to me, I think it's really gratifying to see someone that started at the very bottom. And you guys know what those quality control coaches have to do. I mean, that is like the grunt work of all grunt work. To move his way all the way up through the ranks to be the defensive coordinator. I think he's such a great story. And I mean, how can you not love what the defense is doing right now? 18 sacks, that leads the NFL. The way that Robert Quinn is playing, the way Khalil Mack is feeding off of him. You know, I know that Akeem Hicks has been hurt, but Bilal Nichols is doing great. Angelo Flaxton's made a lot of plays up front. You know, Mario Edwards, if he would just kind of stop with the personal fouls, he's a very impactful player. And then, of course, at linebacker, I mean, Roquan Smith is playing great football. You know, the secondary, Jalen Johnson's kind of emerging in his second year. I think what Sean Desai is doing is being very aggressive, which I think suits this defense perfectly. And I'll tell you, and you guys know this, I mean, if the defense can play at this level all year, the way they've played since the Rams game, which was kind of an outlier, and that was just some busted coverages, and that was unfortunate, but you guys know, I mean, if the defense can keep it up at this level, as that offense continues to kind of grow and find their identity with Justin Fields, a quarterback, the Bears are going to be in a lot of football games. And I just think you've seen that the last couple of the weeks. That defense has played great, and I know the story is going to be maybe the offense and what they did against the Raiders, but just the way that defense held a very good offense in check. And you saw Derek Carr was just completely out of sorts. You know, Darren Waller had that one play early, but they locked down on him. So I think if you're a fan of great defense, you got to love what the Bears are doing, and it's been ultra encouraging.
Yeah, any worry, JD, you know, like Coach Nagy in 2018, his offense comes out on fire. A young coach, right? A lot of same things said about him that are being said about Sean Desai. And then he goes up against Wade Phillips in 2018. In week 14, Wade Phillips puts on film how to slow the Coach Nagy offense down. And we have, you know, it's well documented how much they have struggled now since then. Any worry that Sean Desai gets on film, people don't really know what he's doing yet. You know, we all know what this schedule is about to be coming up. Any worry that somebody figures him out and all of a sudden now he has to adjust?
Oh, I think so, Olin. Don't you think? I think that's probably going to happen. I mean, just go back just to week one. I mean, Sean McVay had Bears number like crazy against, you know, in that Rams game. I think that's always a fear. I think that's always a concern. And yeah, I mean, what are they going to do against the Packers this weekend? What's Bruce Arians and Tom Brady going to see on film the following week? I mean, you mentioned the schedule. It gets really brutal. That's why I thought that Raiders win was so important, because that was still a very, I thought, a pretty good team, a better team than what they showed. And to get that win on the road to kind of tip off this big part of the schedule was really important. But absolutely, I think as Sean Desai goes along, he'll begin to show some tendencies. He'll begin to show some stuff that other teams can exploit. I just, you know, and again, guys, it's different nowadays. Like when we were all together, The locker room was open. You know, there was great access to players. You could really kind of get to know people and kind of get a gauge for just not being on the team, but kind of get a gauge for how guys are feeling. There was so much access to the assistant coaches. Like, we don't really get that anymore, but every interaction that I personally have with Sean Desai, I really like him. I don't think that he feels like, I don't sense a big ego there. I feel like here's a guy that's really, again, been hardworking, that really appreciates the opportunity, that knows that it's a players' league and it's on the players ultimately. They're going to be the ones that are going to, you know, either sink this thing or make them rise up. So I think with Nagy, you know, maybe a little bit too much too soon, you know, and then the play calling gets a little goofy and we're kind of in this situation right now where they're again changing play caller. I don't feel that way about Sean Desai. I think he's got a real level head. I think he knows he's going to make mistakes, but I think he works hard enough and is smart enough where, yeah, teams are going to get the best of him some weeks, but I think he's good enough to overcome that and bounce back and make those necessary adjustments he has to make after teams kind of get, you know, a clue onto what he's doing.
All right, JD, man, but if I pull some John Gruden-ish stuff out on this town, the way everybody's talking about Nagy his first year, it sounds a lot like Sean Desai now. I mean, hey, J-Mac, I was telling somebody the other week, I go, you guys hate the monster you created. They're like, what are you talking about? I said, when he first started talking, because remember John Fox, right, JD? Everybody's like, he doesn't say enough. He doesn't talk. I remember when Nagy came, he was so refreshing. Yeah. So refreshing to see this wide open offense and his coach who tells us everything. And now guess what they say, J-Mac? He talks too damn much.
Right. Well, those people are crazy. Those people don't work in the media, because I'll tell you what, having fought the battles with Lovey, having lived through that era, Mark Trestman and whatever that was, and Fox, you know, that was a tough couple of years. I'll take Nagy's openness over anybody. I think with Nagy, I think the problem, guys, is, and you guys know, I mean, you get the job based on what your offensive background is supposed to be. You know, you get the job because of the offense, and the offense just really hasn't worked well when you have been in charge for the most part. So I think that's the confusing part. But, you know, if he can continue to get away with delegating these authorities to Bill Lazor and just be the head coach on Sunday and they win, I guess, you know, he'll be okay in the long run.
Yeah, JD, I want to talk about the running game. And, you know, in the absence of David Montgomery, obviously Damian Williams and Khalil Herbert stepped in admirably. But Khalil Herbert in particular, you know, he's a guy who was just looked at as being, you know, one of the return men. And he came in and he played really well running an outside zone that they ran. I think he hit the hole hard. And I think he really surprised me, and I'm sure he surprised a lot of people here in Chicagoland. You know, talk about him and his progress from, you know, when he first got to Hallis Hall and where he's at now.
I mean, I was stunned, guys. They ran the ball the way they did without Montgomery. And it was Damian Williams and it was Khalil Herbert. And I mean, you don't have to go back and watch the All 22 to see that there were so many holes. I mean, the offensive line did a great job. And that was one of those games where when you're sitting there, you can just feel, even though we're at the very top of the stadium in Vegas, you can just feel how physical that game was and how the Bears just were imposing their will and running the ball and really controlling the clock and letting Justin Fields just kind of manage the game a little bit, but still take a couple of shots here or there. That was really a fun thing to watch. Yeah, Khalil Herbert comes to Hallis Hall, and there wasn't a lot of optimism that he was going to contribute much early on because the Bears, of course, had Montgomery. They had Damian Williams. There was still the thought, you know, back then that maybe Tariq Cohen would be in the mix, and that's still obviously not happening yet. Mm-hmm. So Khalil Herbert was brought to upgrade the kickoff return game, and that's pretty much it. But the way he ran was, again, just so impressive. And what I love, too, guys, is the Bears played great complementary football. And how long have we been calling for that to happen? How long has Nagy been calling for that to happen? You know, really, with the defense playing as well as they played, then you got a run game that controls the clock. You got your young quarterback that you're kind of bringing along, and you don't have to ask him to do too much. The pass protection's really good. The run blocking is excellent. Your punter is having, you know, one of the best starts to his NFL career, and special teams hasn't given up any big plays or anything. So I just thought all around it was such an impressive performance. It wasn't a masterpiece or anything, but just go on the road against what I thought was a good team and run the ball that way and have Khalil Herbert run the ball that way. You know, what a boost for them going into the Packers game. Now, if it doesn't happen versus Green Bay and they're one-dimensional, that's going to be a problem. If it doesn't happen against Green Bay and they let Aaron Rodgers back on the field too much because they can't control the clock, that's going to be a problem. But at least for that one game, it really worked with Williams and Khalil Herbert. And Khalil Herbert, to this point, outside of Robert Quinn and his kind of reemergence on defense, I think Khalil Herbert's been one of the most pleasant surprises on the team.
Mm-hmm. He looked tough, man. He looked tough running last week. And like you said, the Bears offensive line played a physical brand of football. That was, like you said, that's the game plan. But, you know, JD, I go back to the offseason, and Coach Nagy was talking about he was looking for leaders. He was looking for multipliers, guys who made other guys around them better. And I think about watching Justin Fields come in versus the Bengals, play against the Browns. Things just don't look good. But then he comes back, and that's what you're looking for, right? You're looking for a young guy to come back, play better against the Lions and then against the Las Vegas Raiders. What have you seen from this young man leadership-wise that you really like?
I like Olin that he's real calm. You know, he's not all flighty. He's not all nervous. And I know three of us have seen those quarterbacks come through hell, all right? Where you're like, oh, this isn't going to work. You just know right away. You know, we've seen that. We've lived it. He's not like that at all. And you're right. It was a terrible performance against the Browns. Mm-hmm. But I think the way that he was able to push that aside, to take whatever he could learn from it, if there was anything he could learn from it, and flush the rest and come back and have a pretty good performance against Detroit, a nice performance against the Raiders, I think that really speaks a lot to his leadership and to his character. I think he is smart enough to know what he doesn't know, right? I don't think he's trying to go in there and run the show. I mean, he's not like that. I mean, that takes time to develop that type of leadership. Mm-hmm. But I think he's doing what he needs to do at that position. I think the players respect him. I think he's a good guy in the locker room. I thought Mitch was a good guy in the locker room. Don't get me wrong, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, when it came time to play against a really good team, you know, Mitch just didn't get it done against those type of teams. I think Justin Fields eventually is going to. And I was thinking about this the other day because I knew the three of us were going to be talking. You know, I like what they've done the last 2 weeks is they're still letting him take the shots down the field, but they're not putting too much on him. It's not like, and I thought Kyle Orton was a great player, man. I thought he was so good, especially in 2008 when you guys just missed the playoffs at 9-7. But remember Kyle's rookie year, there was that one game where he threw all those picks at Soldier Field. Mm-hmm. After that, remember that? They pulled the reins back on him so much where he really was just a game manager. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's what they've done at all to Justin Fields, because I still think they're going to let him take those shots downfield to Darnell Mooney, to Allen Robinson, show off that big play capability. But they're not saying, hey, you got to win the game for us by throwing the ball 50 times, because what rookie quarterback can really do that against good competition? I just like everything to this point. Since the Browns game, I like the approach. I think Justin Fields is going to be really good. Maybe it's because, you know, it's been so long since the Bears have really had that guy that we've all been around the other quarterbacks that had, some of them had very good traits, but never really one that could just put everything together. I think there really is that possibility. I think it's going to take time. I think he's got to stay healthy. I think the Bears got to surround him with the right players. But, you know, Olin, I like him. Mm-hmm. I like how he comes across. I like how he plays. And I think for the most part, again, not being in the locker room, which is a huge disadvantage to us, I think his style plays very well in the locker room. I'd be surprised if you found a lot of guys that didn't like what Justin Fields was all about inside that locker room.
Yeah, JD, you talked about all those qualities he has, and I think one that stands out to me is his toughness, you know, not just mentally but physically. I mean, we saw him take the shot from Jonathan Abram early in the game, took a big shot, and then, you know, you show him on the sideline, you can tell he was fazed by it, but came back in. And then he comes back and he scrambles and, you know, hyperextends his knee, and, you know, back in years past, you know, quarterbacks probably would have sat out the rest of the game, but he comes back in and continues to lead his team. So I'm impressed with him, you know, his toughness. And then a few weeks back, gets sacked, you know, I don't know how many times. I think it was nine times against Cleveland.
Yeah.
Nine times against Cleveland, but keeps coming back mentally and physically. You know, I think he's exactly what we need here in Chicago in terms of toughness from that position. I think that's something that we haven't had in a long time. Just give me your thoughts on that.
I'll tell you. Here's the only thing I ever learned from Cutler, okay? We'll bring up Cutler for a second. The only thing Jay ever said that resonated with me is, if you're not available, they're going to get rid of you. Mm. And he meant that at the quarterback position, right? Like, if you are not available to play, they're going to find somebody else. Now, for all his strangeness, he was available to play most weeks until the end, until he got later in his career. Early on, though, I mean, he did take a lot of hits, but he was always pushing to come back sooner than really he should have been pushing to come back. But J-Mac, I agree with you. I think there's something to be said, and you guys can talk about this way more than I can. I think there's something to be said for a quarterback taking a hit, for hyperextending his knee a little bit, bouncing right back up, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, he went to the sideline, but still, to bounce right back up and not to stay down, I think that just shows you, like you said, I mean, there's a lot of toughness there. To be hit nine times and not brush it off, because you can't brush off being hit nine times, but to not really show that it physically affected you that much, I think there's great value to that. And I think he is tough. And I think too, guys, and I don't know if you guys have been around him, he is physically impressive. He's a big guy. You know what I mean? I mean, he's not a bodybuilder, but I mean, he's just built really big. And I agree, Jamek. I think that's what you want in your quarterback. I think you want a guy that you can feel like you can depend on is going to be out there almost every single week. And guys that are going to get banged up but can play through injuries. And I think he's done that quite effectively. I agree 100%.
All right, JD, give us your Packers preview. And under what rock do the Bears find their points to beat Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers?
I don't know, Holden. I don't see the rock right now. If they play like they played against the Raiders, you know, if the defense is pressuring Aaron Rodgers, now, sadly, when you look up the numbers and look at Aaron Rodgers against the Bears, I mean, the only time the Bears have ever really done much is when they hurt him. You know, when Aaron Rodgers has been hurt, you guys remember those games where he would get knocked out of the game and then you would have like a Seneca Wallace running around and the Bears would find a way to win. I don't know. I think it's a tough matchup. Although I thought the Raiders were going to be a tough matchup and the Bears really kind of clamped them down. But if they could run the ball, if they could limit Rodgers' exposure on the field, if they can make a couple of big plays against that defense, maybe they can make this thing really interesting. I don't quite see it. I probably am going to pick the Packers when we make our picks later today to win the game. I just don't think the Bears have enough firepower offensively to match what the Packers are going to do. Even though the Bears defense is playing great, Aaron Rodgers is just a completely different level. And one thing about Aaron Rodgers, when he's scorned and he's, you know, feels like he was mistreated this offseason, I don't know what it is about him, man. He becomes even that much more dangerous. And they've got all the weapons on offense. So I just don't think the Bears offensively are going to have enough to get this one done.
JD, we want to be respectful of your time. I have one last question. You're a guy that's in the analyst business. What is it like analyzing young Parker's games compared to analyzing the Bears?
I am so happy these kids are playing tackle football. Can I just tell you guys this? I mean, we missed this last year so much.
Man,
so last year they did like a camp for like 8 weeks, but it wasn't the same, right? I love youth sports. I mean, it's seriously like, it's like my favorite thing. You know, my son also plays baseball and basketball at a pretty competitive level. But I mean, there's nothing watching these guys play tackle football. It's so great. And you know what I love too is I love that they're learning how to play the game safely at a young age.
Mm-hmm.
And people ask me all the time, like, why do you let your son play tackle? I'm like, why would I not let my son play that? Are you kidding me? Like, think about it. I mean, he's learning how to play the right way now when he was 7, 8, 9, 10, versus going to high school for the first time, putting the pads on against guys that really hit hard now and move really, really well. And you don't know how to play the game. You don't know how to play it safely. I love it. I'm with you guys. I think all three of us are in agreement how much we love youth football. And there is just nothing I love more. The greatest thing that we did is we live stream the games now. Mm. So even when the parents have to be on the road or in Vegas or whatever, you can watch the games live.
Yeah.
Just no more personal fouls, and we'll be totally fine.
Give them a few more. Give them a few more. They got to get a few more in there. I actually coached up at Libertyville years ago. Jim, my son was a senior now at Loyola. He played at Libertyville, and then we moved over to St. Mary's. But Libertyville's got a great youth program there. From what I remember, a lot of good coaches, and they do a nice job, man.
And you know what, Olin? The numbers are so up, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's over 150 tackle players, which is great. Compare that to 5 years ago, right, when the numbers were really low. Oh, it's just awesome. And again, there's nothing like watching your kids. You guys don't. Nothing like watching your kids play, and especially when it's football. It's just awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be even better when all them kids are in that caramel Corsair uniform, Jay. It's going to be awesome, man. It's going to be so awesome.
Right up the road. Right up the road to the left.
Right up the street. We got everything you need. Well, JD, we thank you for joining us, man. And, you know, I really appreciate you giving your insight. Always been a good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And look forward to going to see Parker some more of his games. And wish you nothing but the best, as always.
Awesome stuff, JD.
You guys are the best. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks, JD.
Hey guys, it's Olin Krutz, and I want to tell you about Tequila Embajador, the official tequila of the No Name Podcast. Whether it's celebrating a big win or just kicking back after work, adding Tequila Embajador takes every gathering to the next level. The care, quality, and patience put into each and every bottle of Tequila Embajador can be tasted from the first sip to the last, and it's why we're honored to call them our teammates. Go to their website, embajadortequila.com, and use the code KICKOFF10 and receive your discount on your next purchase of Tequila Embajador, the official tequila of the No Name Podcast.
Brother, we got one of our favorite teammates, man, a legend in the locker room, true bona fide leader. Played a lot of football in his day. Chicago Bears fan favorite, you know, one of my favorite running backs that I had opportunity to play with and block for, our man Thomas Jones. Let me give him the proper introduction, Brother O. Mm-hmm. From Big Stone Gap, Virginia, right? 5'10", 215 pounds, all muscle. 12-year NFL vet, 2008 first team all pro and pro bowler, first round draft pick, University of Virginia all-time leading rusher and All-American, 10,000-yard rushing club member. You can find him on the big screen as well. He's been in movies like Straight Outta Compton, the Luke Cage series, and movies like A Violent Man. He's been in P-Valley, Being Mary Jane, and currently he's in the TV series called The Johnsons. T. Jones, how you doing, brother?
What's up, brother? How you doing, man? Thanks for the introduction. Always great to talk to you and Big O.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Man, T. Jones, you've done a lot of stuff, man, and I love it because you were always a guy in the locker room that it's never been just about football. I mean, you were the consummate pro. You know, you always were consistent with everything that you did, but it was never just about football. And that just goes to show, you know, with the introduction, you being in the movies and on the big screen and doing your thing, man. Let's talk about your newest venture, man, the new TV series that you have out.
Yeah, man. Well, thanks, bro. I appreciate it. You know, we had a very interesting locker room, to say the least, back in those days. You know what I'm saying? With all of us, man. You know, incredible times, incredible guys on that team. But, you know, in regards to just what I'm doing now, you know, I'm a full-time actor and producer, and I have a TV series that actually just ended called Johnson that I executive produced and starred in with my producing partner, Daisy LeRae, as well as Cedric the Entertainer. And it's about four black men living in Atlanta, best friends. And, you know, we kind of navigate through their life experiences. You know, it's told from a black male POV, just giving some of the specifics in regards to just how, you know, we have to move in specific places in our lives in certain situations and how they affect us. Very interesting show. The premiere episode opened up to 2.1 million viewers, which was a network record for Bounce TV. That's the network that the show was on. And we just finished last weekend, actually, our 10th episode, the season finale, and we were renewed for season 2. So we go back into production for season 2 in January. So it's a great show, very specific. We get into a lot of issues that, you know, you don't really see from the male POV, especially the black male POV, such as mental health conversations, child custody situations, you know, divorce and marriage issues, commitment issues from men, you know, also just some of the, you know, so get into some of the interracial relationship conversations. You know, it's a very broad show in regards to just the topics that we discuss and that we show these characters kind of going through. And I think anybody that watches this show will be enlightened, educated, and entertained at the same time.
Hey, T. Jones, you talked about a lot of times about the African-American male's point of view there. And I hear a lot of talk about the way people feel about what John Gruden went through this week. And I know you were down there with him in 2003 with Tampa Bay. Just kind of want to know what you think about everything that's going on in the NFL right now. John Gruden losing his job and emailing somebody 10 years ago and getting fired for it.
Well, yeah, John Gruden in Tampa Bay, they traded, made a trade for me from Arizona back in 2003. And, you know, when I met, you know, John, he was a good guy, you know, he was a passionate guy. I could tell, you know, he knew his stuff when it came to football. And, you know, he believed in me and my ability. So, you know, obviously I was excited to go from, you know, a team that we didn't have much success to a team that just won the Super Bowl. But at the same time, you know, that was just him as a coach. You know, in his personal life, you know, I wasn't really sure who he was. And honestly, I didn't really care. You know, he's my coach. I'm there to do my job and he's there to do his. In regards to just what happened with the email situation and being fired, I mean, I'm not surprised by it. You know, racism is a huge part of this country. And unfortunately, it doesn't seem to I don't know. It doesn't seem that it's going to go any. It doesn't going to change. You know, you have people who come from different walks of life. There's a lot of people who are ignorant of other people's lifestyles and other people's cultures, and you know, they don't want to evolve. And you know, that's their loss at the end of the day. You know, I think collectively as people, you know, we all have something to bring to the table, something to offer, and something that we can learn from each other. And you know, even though the emails were 10 years ago. You know, you're the head coach of a multi-billion-dollar corporation, and there's a lot of responsibility that comes with that. I mean, the NFL hires people from all of these different minority demographics that were insulted in those emails. I see a lot of people saying, well, they were 10 years ago, or, you know, what about this person? What about that person? Well, you know, I understand what you're saying, but, you know, it's not about anybody else. It's about Gruden. It was his emails that were exposed. So he has to deal with the consequences of what he said, you know. But like I said, I'm not surprised. You know, the NFL is a microcosm of America to me and the world, and so you're going to have people that I think are shocked by, you know, the way certain people think behind closed doors. But I personally wasn't surprised at all, and I know that he's not the only one. And you know, that's kind of what I think about it.
Man, I hope no one recorded me, you, and J-Mac 10 years ago. T. Jones on the bus in your chinchilla. I hope no one's got you talking.
I like your moves. I love your moves.
Hey, man, listen, man. I hope that nobody was, I mean, honestly, man, with us, you know, that's the fun about being in the locker room. Mm-hmm. Being around, you know, it's like your kids again, man. You can talk trash to each other. You know, you're in an environment where, you know, it's a raw environment. So, you know, a lot of people don't get offended by a lot of different things. You know, we're all going through the same thing day to day in regards to just practice and games and the stakes of having to win to keep your job. And if you lose, you lose your job. I mean, we all go through this thing, and that's the beautiful thing about the locker room. So many different cultures come together, and we learn from each other because we have to. We're around each other every day. You're going to pick up on something from your teammate. You know, your locker may be next to somebody that never even grew up around anyone from your culture. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just how they keep their locker, just how they talk, you know, just how they, you know, there's little specific things that you see and you learn and you adapt. and you grow and evolve. You know what I'm saying? That's the beautiful thing about the game of football and sports in general. And that's the thing about John Gruden. It's like, you know, you live in that environment. You're coaching guys that, you know, are helping you make the $100 million that you made and the other money, that Super Bowl championship that you won in Tampa. I mean, all these same people that you're insulting are the same people that have helped you be successful. Mm-hmm. Without them, you wouldn't be successful. But it just goes to show, you know, some people have a little more privilege than others to feel they can actually do certain things and say certain things and not be accountable. And, you know, John Gruden, I guess, learned the hard way.
Yeah, T. John, I'm going to switch lanes a little bit. I want to talk about, you know, what it's like, you know, preparing for a movie or a TV role compared to prepping for a game.
It's a lot safer. For one.
Jay, same amount of bicep curls though, right?
same amount of muscle milk.
y'all good?
We love you, man. We love you. You know we love you, man. We love you. Hey, we love you, man. Stall us out.
Listen. This wouldn't be an authentic conversation if y'all didn't get on me about the curls. Actually, it's the same. Same amount of curls.
Oh, my God.
You know, but it's safer. I mean, obviously, I'm not out there crashing into people every day. But, you know, psychologically, it's similar. You know, you know, you have to learn your lines. As an actor, you know, as a producer, you have to understand the each character storylines. You have to understand, you know, each character story arc and character arc. And you have to be able to make sure when you're on set, even if I'm not in the scene as an actor, that I'm watching the scene from the monitor and making sure that those actors are, you know, giving us what we need, performance wise. And different options performance wise. So in post production, when we're editing, we have different choices to go with different takes, maybe a different emotion on this one take. You know, maybe, you laugh this time, the next time you cry. So we have different options. It's similar to football. It's like, hey, you know, we're going to run, you know, inside zone this way this week, but then the next week, based off of the defense we're playing, we're going to run inside zone another way, or we're going to run another version of inside zone. It's the same thing, but a different version. So there's a lot of similarities there. You know, I always like to talk about the playbook in the NFL and then the script as an actor. The more you know your plays in the NFL, you know, you're going to be able to just react on game day, and you're not thinking of what does this shift mean? What does this motion mean? Oh, wow, they shifted into a 4-3. Who do I block? Or they shifted into a bear. You're not thinking who you have to block. You know because you've done the work. You studied the plays. You studied the defenses and the fronts and the coverages. And so, you know, you're just reacting off of what you've seen all week. Those are the players that play as long as we played and all three of us and have the success that we had. The players that don't do that, they don't last. It's the same thing with actors. You know, the more you know your script, the more you know your character, the more you've connected to your character personally, did some backstory in regards to why this character is the way they are, then you're able to turn that character that someone wrote and make him or her you. And now when they say the director says action, you're not thinking about, damn, what's my line? Oh, I forgot. It's like, I'm just able to live and breathe this character so honestly that when people watch it, they really believe that you're that character. They don't even look at you as you. They believe the character, which is important for them to actually care about you and then care about as an actor and then care about the script and the story. So there's a lot of similarities there. That's why I think it was a little bit easier for me to transition into this than people would have expected.
Man, really unbelievable stuff. That's crazy. But T. Jones, why not talk to you a little bit about this year's Chicago Bears this week, 3-2, rookie quarterback going to play against the 4-1 Green Bay Packers for the NFC North. Not a lot of success the Bears have had against the Packers lately, but you, T. Jones, I think you were 4-1 in all the games you played against the Packers. I remember that 2004, the 150-yard performance, obviously. We always were handing the ball to T. Jones in those years.
Yes, sir.
The team is a lot, but kind of like 2005, T. Jones, when we ran the ball a lot. Kyle Orton was our rookie quarterback. I think we finished top 10 in rushing. The team right now is ninth in the league in rushing. Just kind of first want to ask you about, what do you remember about playing the Packers and how much it meant to you? Because one of the few Chicago Bears that had a winning record against them.
Yeah, man, that rivalry is one of the oldest in sports. I remember the first time I played in Lambeau in 2004. It was in 2003 we played Tampa. When I was in Tampa, we played Green Bay at Tampa. But my first time playing in Lambeau was 2004. The first game that I played at Lambeau, and I mean, just walking in that stadium with that Bears uniform on, the white jerseys, the dark blue pants, seeing everything at Lambeau, all green, all yellow. Packers come out of their, you know, side of the locker room for warm ups. We come out of our side. Honestly, it was like I couldn't believe that I was in Lambeau. It was so exciting. It felt like, man, you know, you watch these games as a kid every Sunday, and you hear, you know, Pat Summerall and John Madden and all these commentators, you know, Green Bay Packers and Chicago Bears, and you're the starting running back. I mean, honestly, all these things were going through my head during warmups, and I was so excited and so hyped just to be there, and I wanted to make sure that, you know, obviously I played the best that I could, but, you know, we ended up with about 100, I think I had about 150, 159 yards, and we won. It was a big, big day. I mean, it was incredible. Honestly, it was one of the best experiences that I've ever had in a football game, my first game at Lambeau, and to be able to win. And then just to have a 4-1 record against Green Bay, that's such a big rivalry, you know, the Packers and the Bears. Incredible, incredible, very grateful. We had some good years. We had some, I mean, honestly, in 2005, we beat them, I think we beat them twice in 2005.
Let me check out. I think you're right. Yep.
Yeah, I think we did beat them.
Yeah, I think the only loss you might have against them might be the one we didn't play the last right. game in 2006.
Yeah, before going into the playoffs, that mm-hmm. last game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was the game that, okay, yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say it to you either. Oh, man.
Let's just say somebody said they were thinking about New Year's Eve.
The interview.
And, you know, yeah, I'm still flabbergasted to this day by that comment. Oh, but man. But no, man. Yeah, those were some great, great games against Green Bay. And I think, you know, this year, you know, the offensive line is doing a really good job coming off the ball. Feels like they're in sync. You know, Montgomery, I know he went down a couple weeks ago. I'm very, very grateful that his knee injury wasn't as bad. But, you know, it's like anything else. You know, if you stick to it and you kind of, you know, get in a rhythm, then, you know, you're going to have some success. And that's what I like about it. That's Chicago Bears football. You know, one thing about a lot of these teams and their personalities is if you get away from the personality of the team, usually you're not going to be successful. And that's just the personality of the Bears, especially coming around this time of year when it's, you know, the weather's getting cooler. People have to come into Soldier Field, tough environment with those, you know, intense fans, all the mystique of that whole stadium. If you're able to run the ball, control the clock and wear them down on defense, you give yourself a better chance to win. So, I think they're doing a pretty good job. Justin Fields, I'm excited about him. You know, I think he's brought a lot of excitement to Chicago, just his energy and his athleticism and his potential. So I think they're on the right path.
Yeah, TJ, I just want to talk about the running game a little more. You know, the Bears have gone to a running back by committee with Montgomery out to use Khalil Herbert, and Damian Williams both played well. Talk about Khalil Herbert's a rookie. He got 18 carries last week. I think he did really well. They ran a lot of outside zone with him. Talk about, you know, as a young back coming in the NFL, some of the challenges that you face and that you have to overcome.
The biggest challenge, I think, is to understand the blocking schemes. Because in high school and college, you can use your athleticism to get out of a lot of situations where, you know, it might not be the best play call, or it might not be blocked the best way. But in the NFL, I mean, you have to really truly understand the blocking schemes. You have to trust your line, offensive linemen, because you're not going to be able to outrun everybody. You know, the defensive linemen are running just as fast as you. There's, you know, everybody's big. Everybody is very smart and instinctive. And so I think for me, the hardest thing was just not, you know, relying on my instincts all the time and actually becoming more of a technical runner. And I wasn't able to really accomplish that, honestly, until I came to Chicago. And so I think for him, you know, to get 18 carries, you know, it was a sign of confidence in him. I think, you know, he's a strong back. He's got good speed and good vision. And I think they've kind of bought into, you know, that offense, you know, being a back in the NFL as a young, rookie or second year player, it's kind of tough because you only get a couple of opportunities. You know, if you go in and you have a fumble or if you go in and you don't produce, you're coming out of the game. And if your confidence goes, then that's the beginning of the end.
Hey, T. Jones, talk to us about what we should be looking at, or what should Khalil Herbert, with his first carries last week, he looked really good, actually. He hit the hole hard. He looked strong, man. Should he be working on this week? What should he be studying film and things that he should be looking to improve on? Just from your point of view of a rookie running back, you take him in, okay, you had your first couple plays. Now let's go in this film room and let's improve on whatever you think he should be looking at.
I think he should look at his technique. Mm-hmm. And that's why I mentioned earlier, I didn't realize in college or in high school how much your technique and as a running back would matter so much, because you have to understand the blocking schemes. For example, you run an inside zone. You know, when we ran inside zone in high school and college, I just would open up and come downhill and get the ball. But in the NFL, I realized, you know, you have to give the offensive lineman an opportunity to block their guys. And by doing that in the inside zone, instead of just opening up and coming downhill, you have to open up, cross over, and get to the inside leg of the tackle. And that gives the center and the guard an opportunity to get to the second level if need be. So now you don't have the linebacker in the hole getting ready to hit you as soon as you get the ball, because now he's standing there waiting to see what you're going to do. And I think, you know, if I would have learned better technique earlier in my career, or if I would have actually listened, because, I mean, it wasn't that I wasn't taught it, but – you know, you sometimes as a rookie, or as first year player, you get a little nervous and you rely on your instincts because you have to build that trust. But if I would have learned technique earlier in my career, I think that would have helped me a lot earlier. And I think that's key for him. Understand the blocking schemes, understand your footwork, be consistent with your footwork on every play. You know, understand the defense and know why you're doing what you're doing, as opposed to just doing it because the coach told you. So I think he should focus on him. Mm-hmm. You know, he should focus on him and understanding his technique and understanding the blocking schemes.
Yeah, T. Jones, being a high school coach, I try to, you know, teach my young backs, they just want to get the ball and run. And, you know, I try to teach them that, you know, the most important thing for a young running back is pass protection. Mm. You know, they don't want to do the dirty work. You know, they just want to get the ball and run. Can you tell our listeners the importance of pass protection?
Yeah, I mean, you can't be an every down back if you can't play every down. And if you can't pass protect, then you have to come out on pass plays. So that limits your opportunities to even potentially get the ball, because some, you know, passing situations you're going to run. So that's an opportunity that you miss to carry the ball because you can't pass protect. I think for him, you know, as a rookie and in any back in high school and college, pass protection is all about pride. It's all about will, and it's all about character. Because if you can protect the passer, then you can. That means that you probably, you know, care enough about, you know, your team and doing whatever you need to do to win, to where you're going to be successful. You know what I'm saying? That's a tough job. Sometimes with running backs, we're asked to block guys that are, you know, 100 pounds heavier than us. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you know, that's part of the job. And it's a testament to toughness, man. You know, when I running back groups, you know, if you couldn't protect the passer, I mean, honestly, you didn't get any respect from us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our coach would always say, you know, if you're not willing to put your faith in the fan, then you can't play.
Yep.
You know, and that's part of the game. That's how the quickest way you can earn respect from anybody on your team, offense, defense, anybody, is pass protection. So I definitely understand that young backs want to just get the ball and run. But just know that, you know, you can't pass protect more than likely you're not going to be an every down back, especially in the NFL.
Yeah, and it's an important week. The Packers like to try to figure out, like, you know, yeah. T. Jones, they figure out your pass protection and then send that linebacker where the running back is blocking. So the things you're talking about with these two backup running backs are going to be important this week. T, I'm wondering, and I, you know, just like in 2005, oh, and I found it, in 2005 we did win both games. You know, one game you had 19 rushes for 93 yards, 4.9 a carry. Mm. Next game, 25 rushes for 105 yards, 4.2 a carry. Mm. Typical Thomas Jones stuff. Sure. But I'm wondering, you know, of all the years you played with quarterbacks, and, you know, the year I think about the most is 2005 when a young Kyle Orton had to come in when Rex Grossman got injured, was out for the year early in the preseason. What would be your advice? You just gave advice to the running back. You're back there playing with a quarterback as a veteran running back like Damon Williams. What things are you looking to do to help Justin Fields? And what would you be your advice for Justin Fields during the week?
In regards to helping Justin Fields, the best way you can help a young quarterback is by having a running game. Mm-hmm. And so if I were him, I would get with the offensive lineman and I would watch film. I would do the best that I could to make sure that our running game was as efficient as possible to take pressure off of him. Because if you do that, then he doesn't feel like he has to do everything. And if I were giving advice to him, I would say, don't try to win the game. Don't try to win the game. Play your game. Because when you try to win the game, usually you lose it. Play your game. Play within your skill set. Do what you do best. You know, a lot of people have opinions on this and opinions on that. But at the end of the day, you know, when that ball snapped, it's on you. And all those opinions and everything you heard and sports talk and all these other, you know, people that have opinions and things, you know, they can't help you. You know, you're isolated. It's on you. So play your game. You know what your skill set is. You know what your reads are. You know the coverages. And that's why it's so important to study. A lot of people, when they see football players, they just think you go out there and run into each other. And it's crazy now. I've been out now, for so long that I don't really watch too much. I keep up with everything pretty much on social media. And, you know, obviously if I'm out or somewhere at a bar or something, it's on, I'll watch. But, you know, people, I don't have any idea how smart you have to be to play in the NFL and how disciplined you have to be to play in the NFL. Mm-hmm. You know, the smartest players are the best. The smartest players are the most successful. Mm-hmm. There's so much to learn. It's a never ending process of learning. You know, I was still learning in my eighth, ninth year when I went to New York with Jimmy Ray as my running backs coach. I was still learning. Even my 10th year, 11th year with Maurice Carthon in Kansas City, I was still learning, even into my 12th year. So with Justin Fields, it's like, man, you know, you have literally a city that loves you, that's, you know, showing you support. It's a chance of a lifetime for any quarterback in football. Mm. You're in Chicago. You have an incredible opportunity. Just play your game. Study, know your stuff, and play your game. And I think you should be okay. Mm.
Yeah, T. Jones, we want to be respectful of your time. Mm-hmm. Got to get That's it out there. Word. Got to get it out there. Mm-hmm. Respectful of your time.
had to get you out good, J Mac. You good? You good, bro? You good?
Hey, all them hits I took for you, man. All them hits for you, baby.
That's for that muscle milk joke, man. Hey, we need another Twitter session, man. A full AP hit. AJ Peterson in there.
All right. I'm a star one. I'm going to get you, man. But now we want to be respectful of your time, man. And thank you for joining us, man. Always good talking to you and catching up with you, man. And I look forward to seeing you on your next project on the TV screen, whether it's a movie or a TV series, man. And, you know, it's always good to have you on, man. And want to wish you nothing but the best.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Big O, J-Mac, I appreciate y'all, man. Love y'all, brothers. Yep. Keep shining, man. Love the show. I'm a big fan. You know what I'm saying? Y'all keep it real.
We're going to have you back, man. We're going to have you back again.
Sure. Listen, man, I'm family, man. Consider me an honorary member, man, of the podcast. So
yes, sir.
whenever y'all need me, man, just hit me and let me know, man. I'm always down, man. Love y'all, brothers, man. Bear down.
Yes, T. Jones, sir, send me that Poliquin gun show workout.
I got you, man. I'm a put in a Google Drive, man, when I get home.
Thanks, Steve, man.
All right, bro.
All right, you got it.
Well, that does it for our show today on the No Name Football Podcast. We thank all of our listeners for listening and supporting us on all the social media platforms. Make sure you download our podcast. We're on all the platforms, Spotify, iTunes, whatever your choice is. Make sure you download it. Make sure you tell your friends and family. Give us a rating if you like. Hopefully it's a 5-star rating, but if not, give us a rating anyway. We like your feedback and criticism, that things we can improve on upon our show. But before we go, as usual... Man, I want to suit up right now. In the words of the great Mike Brown, you guys keep making plays in life, and we'll keep making these great podcasts for you. We're out, and we'll see you next time, Chicago. Take care. God bless.
Mahalo.